Live from the World Wide Web, from this world to beyond, where mediumship, the afterlife, and conscious living are discussed, and much more right here on the Glenn Klausner Hour. Now here's your host, psychic medium Glenn Klausner.
Good evening, everyone, and I hope everyone is having a great day. Tonight I have a very special guest on. He's a super great friend of mine that I've known for now just about 25 years. And
ouch,
25 years. He is a world-renowned drummer extraordinaire who has played with the greats like Billy Idol, Iggy Pop, Mick Jagger, Belinda Carlisle, Gloria Estefan, Jason Mraz. The list goes on and on and on. And please welcome to the show my good friend Greg Gerson.
Guys.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Glenn.
Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Oh, sure.
It's a pleasure to actually get to interview you and talk about your life and your work as a musician, too.
Well, there you go.
So let's go back from the beginning. You got it all started down on the boardwalk of Atlantic City as a young man.
Yeah, I grew up in Atlantic City, and I remember my mom would take me down to the boardwalk, and I would watch the parades, and I would see the drummers playing in cadence, and I lost my mind. I just lost my mind when I saw that. That was it. And I started doing it. From that point on, I already knew that that's what I wanted to do, and sure enough, my mom and dad were telling me that I was making, playing drums when I was in the crib, so they... There you go.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, your first experiences were people like Count Basie and Maynard Ferguson and Buddy Rich and all these great jazz guys.
I grew up in Atlantic City, right? And so, I mean, I'm talking in Atlantic City on Pennsylvania Avenue. This is back, you know, long before gambling. And, I mean, Atlantic City was just a Jersey Shore town, you know, like Asbury Park or any other, city, on the beach. And in Atlantic City, they had the Steel Pier, and the Steel Pier, was this pier that went out into the ocean about a quarter of a mile. It was this long, gigantic pier, and they'd have, like, live music all the time. It was a huge pier. It was just like an amusement park on a pier, I guess. And they had music all the time, and I remember the first time I went to the ballroom there on the pier, and I saw Count Basie, and I was like, oh, my God. I'll never forget it. You know, that was it. I mean, to me, seeing all those horn players, to me, that's heavy metal, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
20 horn players on a song, you know, pushing 20 horns on a stage back there on the drums.
Sure.
That's heavy metal.
That is definitely heavy metal. And, you know, we're going to talk about an artist that you've been working with and touring with a lot in Turkey and Israel, and you're about to go over to Cyprus with this guy named Alexander Markov.
Oh, brilliant.
Who is phenomenal. I saw the video of your drum performance that you have up on MySpace and on your website, which we'll give out as well tonight.
Sure, absolutely.
And it's phenomenal. I'm not saying that because, you know, you and I are friends and I know you, but it's mind-blowing to watch a whole symphony.
Well,
you in the middle of it.
I'll tell you how that started out. I mean, a couple years back, I had gotten a call from, I had done a record with Roger Daltrey. I don't even remember. A few years back, I did a record. I went in and tracked all the drums on it, and Rocks in the Head, Roger Daltrey's Rocks in the Head.
Great album.
It's a really fun record, you know, and Daltrey's really a hoot. And needless to say, a couple years later, I mean, the live gig is always going to be the Who for him, but I mean, he's been singing with the Who, fronting the Who since, you know, forever. And, he sort of got in bed with a fellow named Dave Fischoff, who actually is managing Ringo Starr. I mean, he's a pretty well-known manager and promoter. Needless to say, Roger was on tour. They started this thing called the British Rock Symphony, and they had a drummer doing the gig, and Roger was miserable with this fellow. And so they called Zach Starkey. And Zach was unavailable because he was doing his own project. And Zach said, why don't you call Greg? And Roger went, yeah, let's call Greg. So...
And Zach Starkey happens to be Ringo Starr's son.
Ringo Starr's son. He's a good friend of mine, you know. So anyway, I mean, you know, we all kind of started out together. You know, when you think about it, I mean, you know, like people today, they're starting out. In 15 years from now, they're... Oh, shoot. Hello. Goodbye. Oh, that's Alexandra. Hold on a second. Hey, Alex. Listen, I'm doing a radio interview. I'm going to be talking about you, huh? Let me call you back, because I'm in the middle of it. Okay.
All right, definitely here on live radio, anything can happen.
That was Alexander in New York. Actually, he's leaving for France tomorrow. So he and I are close. We're just working out the deal with the Cyprus concert in the Mediterranean.
Now, that's got to be exciting because that, at the same time, scary because that's in between Israel and Lebanon.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's funny. I mean, I'm going to get to that. I want to bring it back a little bit so the audience can kind of get a perspective.
Sure, sure.
How, you know, playing with Daltrey kind of led up to playing with Alex. You know, anyway, so I got the call. Next thing I know, I'm out playing with the... I had a day to learn this concert. I was sight-reading, basically. I mean, I had the charts were like 5 and 6, 7 pages long, and I was sight-reading it. And then I, you know, I learned the show. But it was a challenge, I can tell you. And so, you know, I was in New York. We played... where was it? Not the Garden. What was it? Radio City. We played Radio City. Anyway, and a really good friend of mine, and I think you know Will Lee, right?
Of course.
Will Lee is the bass player with Dave Letterman, and has been the bass player with Dave Letterman since the show started. Anton is a really good friend of mine, Anton Figg. So those two guys, Will came to see the show, and he loved it, and at the Radio City, and we're friends. And about... About a year and a half later, I get a year and a half ago, I got a call from Will, and he said, "Hey, Will." I mean, he said, "Hey, Greg, it's Will." And I was in L.A. working on a record, and he goes, "Hey, Greg, you want to go to Turkey?" And I went, let me think about it. Yeah. So I said, "Let's do it." And Alex, he said, "I'm going to get you in touch with this fellow, Alexander Markov." And Will said to me, he said, "By the way, Greg, Alexander is the most amazing musician I have ever played with." Now, this is Will Lee, who plays with everybody every single day. Every night he's playing with somebody. I mean, he said that Alex is, like, off the chart. So I was like, whoa. So I was really curious. Alexander gives me a call, and then he FedEx the music, which was, like, as big as a phone book, and a CD. And I had to retranscribe the drums because it really wasn't drums. It was a conductor's score for the four movements for the Rock Concerto, which Alexander wrote with his partner. What was his partner's name? Anyway, so needless to say, we got together in New York, myself, Alexander, and bassist Ivan Bodley, because Will was unable... See, what happened was Will Lee and Anton Figg were both doing this gig with Alexander, except they cannot leave New York, really, because they're locked into the show.
Right, right.
Which, you know, it makes sense. I mean, so they, you know... Alexander was desperate to find people, and he started to look for himself, couldn't find anyone. And so Will introduced me to Alex, and he introduced Ivan Bodley to Alex. And Ivan is one of the most scariest bassists. I mean, he's brilliant. Ivan Bodley is nothing less than brilliant. And he's a great keyboard player. So we got together in New York for the first time over at Montana Studio, and we had never played together, the three of us. I mean, I'd played with Ivan on a bunch of different sessions in New York. And we get together, and we run through the first part of the show, which is about... There's four concertos. The show's about 2 hours long, so I guess it's, what, a half an hour each. Anyway, 45 minutes each concerto. It's really long. And we run through the first part of the show, and we take a break, and the manager of the studio comes up to us and goes, "God, you guys are amazing. How..." And this is just a three-piece, the three of us. Alexander on violin, electric violin, Alex, Ivan on electric bass and keyboard, and me on drums. He said, "How long have you guys been playing together?" And I looked at my watch, and said, about an hour and a half. because we had never played together. He was like, "You're kidding me." I said, "No." It just so what I the point I'm making is it just happened. It just sounded great right from the start.
Well, it's a great thing, Greg. I mean, people. I really would love to give out your web address and the MySpace profile that people can check the video out that you're doing this drum solo, and they can just look through your website. I mean, the photos in there are great, too.
Yeah, the photos are really, they really show. I mean, I've tried to get a hold of as many photos to really, you know, to demonstrate to people what it is, but to see it is to believe it. I mean, it's outrageous. I mean, it's a full symphony with an electric band. The three of us are the electric band, and the full symphony, to see it, I mean, to actually be proud. Like, my father and mother came to see the show for the first time in Connecticut about a month and a half ago, and my dad came up with tears in his eyes. He says, "Greg, I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen you with anything like this before." I mean, he's seen me play with everybody, you know?
Right, but it's a totally different thing. I mean, most people, you know, that know of you, I mean, because you're very known among music industry personnel and play with everybody and their mother, you know, Roy Orbison, a lot of great people.
Roy Orbison, yeah.
And so a lot of people know you with, you know, Billy Idol and all these other people.
Yeah,
and
I'm stereotyped as a rock guy.
Drummer, but a lot of people don't know you really come from a jazz background.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine who's a guitar player here in San Diego, and his name is John Meyer. He's a great guitar player, and we were just talking about, you know, I was just telling him, I said, you know, it's really funny. I mean, people really think I'm a rock drummer. I'm stereotyped as a rock drummer. I'm anything but, you know. I mean, I can do it, but I'm really, really like a jazz guy, classical guy.
Right. Well, what do you think that is, though, actually, Greg? You know, one of the questions that is very interesting to ask you, because you are a jazz guy and you play with a lot of heavyweight rock and rollers.
Well, you know, I've been blessed to play with some really great jazz guys like Stanley Jordan, who's a really good friend of mine. John Scofield, played with him. I've played with Barry Finnerty from the Brecker Brothers, Mike Brecker. And, you know, a lot of these guys that I looked up to as a kid, I ended up playing with. That's really crazy.
Isn't that a great accomplishment, though?
This is kind of surreal, man, to actually, you know, that there's these guys you listen to when you were kind of, you know, a teenager, and then the next thing you know, you're playing with them. It's just like, what? So, I mean, I'm really a jazz guy. But you know, there's another drummer out there, Steve Smith, who's really a jazz guy, who played with Journey.
Right. Right, great drummer.
Frank Zappa. I mean, he's played with a lot of different people, Steve. And he's a great, great player, great guy. And, you know, he played drums with Steps Ahead.
You're not just a drummer. I mean, you are also an accomplished pianist and guitarist. And you've actually, a lot of people that may not know this, you are the flute player on the Gloria Estefan remake of Turn the Beat Around.
Yes, I am. Yeah, well, I'll tell you something. I would probably say that I'm a better flautist than I am anything. And I used to go on the boardwalk when I was like 15 and 16 years old, play flute on the boardwalk so I could meet chicks. I couldn't get a drum set on the boardwalk, I didn't even think about it. I wasn't even thinking about bringing drums. And I would go on the boardwalk with like a guitarist or a bass player and play, man, so I could meet girls. That was kind of how, I fell in love with flute. And I ended up playing flute and assorted instruments with Jason Mraz too, which was really fun.
And Jason's now like a pretty big pop star.
Oh yeah, Jason's, I mean, dude, I tell you, man, I knew, you know, Jason and I met back in like 99, I think, 1999, and we became instant friends. And Toca Rivera, we all started playing together. It was like the three of us were just out playing, like at we played in Ocean Beach, California, which is like a suburb of San Diego, part of San Diego. Yeah, I mean, I live in New York, but I'm back and forth between west and east. And we started playing. What was the name of that club? Java Joe's. And interestingly enough, Java Joe's where Jewel got started. So Jewel was playing there, and then Jason started playing there, and I was playing with Jason, and then Jason took off, and we had a lot of fun.
He's a very different type of writer. He's very crafty.
Yeah, Jason's great, man. He's really, he's a good guy, he's a good musician, it's all good, you know?
It's crafty. I mean,
yeah.
You've definitely really got your start when moving to New York City in the late 1970s.
Right.
And getting to play with guys like Carlos Alomar, who was the guitar player in David Bowie's band.
Yeah.
And
well, Carlos kind of introduced me to a lot of really cool gigs, Carlos Alomar. I mean, he's the one who hooked me up with the Mick Jagger thing. And, you know, we had actually formed this band called the Doug Rock Sh- show with John McCurry also playing guitar. And John, gosh, he was the guitar player with Julian Lennon and
Cyndi Lauper.
Cyndi Lauper. I mean, he's got more gold records and platinum records hanging on his wall than anybody I know, John McCurry.
But I remember you, Phil, John McCurry and Paul Schaefer did a jingle for Crest toothpaste.
Yes, we did. I remember. That was fun too. I remember about that particular session is everybody was laughing.
From the toothpaste?
Yeah, it was just a fun day. I remember it was just a fun session because everybody was having so much fun, you know. And Schaefer's is just hysterical. Paul Schaefer's one of the funniest. He's funny, man. Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, it came about, like, in the early 80s, you got to play with two of my favorite people,
mm-hmm.
my brother, Phil Fight, who's been on this show before.
Oh, Phil is such a great bass player, man. I mean, that guy, I used to call him Phil Cement, you know, because he's so solid.
Oh,
Phil Cement, because he's like solid as a rock.
Well, Phil loves you very much.
Oh, I love him.
And of course, one of our other favorites, who we love, great guitar player Steve Stevens.
You know, Steve's probably one of my best friends.
I know.
I mean, like friends, like not acquaintances. We're I mean, we talk all the time, and we have gone through a whole lot of stuff that, you know, personal stuff, you know, changes that have taken place in both of our lives, and I would say that Steve is probably one of my favorite people. I mean, put aside the fact that he's one of the most astounding guitarists you'll ever see. I mean, I'll tell you, one time I was parking my motorcycle over on West 3rd Street, across the street from the Blue Note in New York. I had parked my bike in this lot there, and I'm pulling out, and I had to stop in and see the major, you know, the fella at the gate there. Took my helmet off, and there's John Scofield. And I know John and Susan Scofield since I moved to New York, And so John and I are friends. He goes, "Greg, dude, you gotta introduce me to Steve Stevens, man." Now, he's one of the greatest jazz guitarists on the planet, and he knows how brilliant Steve is. Because, you know, people have this misconception that Steve is like a rock guitar player. And I'll tell you, if Steve never picked up an electric again, he wouldn't miss it. I mean, he's really a classic. He loves classical and flamenco guitar.
Yeah, he's great at that. I mean, his CD, his solo CD, Flamenco Go-Go, I mean, it's just truly brilliant. And, you know, I've told him that, what to thank him, what an influence he's been on me as a guitar player, too. But you guys, I mean, all played together with Billy Idol and did the White Wedding Tour and went out and did the Rebel Yell album, which tonight we're going to, in a little while, we're going to play a song from that album mm-hmm. that you're on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that the Billy Idol roller coaster had to be a wild ride.
Say again, it was a what ride?
The Billy Idol roller coaster had to be a wild ride.
It was a wild ride. I mean, it was, you know, I was, you know, still trying to figure things out in my personal life at the same time I was playing with Idol. And at that point in time, Idol was, it was a huge thing. Now, you know, when you're doing a gig that is as huge as that, and you sort of, you know, one wants to gain perspective of what's going on around them. And when you're like in your mid-20s, you know, it's kind of, you know, you're a young guy, it's kind of hard to really understand what's going on around you, and with it happening as fast as it did, you know, I mean, we were struggling for like a good year before, we were driving around in a van, you know, your brother Phil, who was the bass player of Billy Idol at that time, will tell you that we were driving around in a little van all throughout the United States before White Wedding really took off.
Right, so there was no limousines and no fancy planes and all that.
Oh, no. I was making like $200 a week, you know.
Matter of fact, in your website, there's a picture of the paycheck in there.
Yeah, $250 paycheck. That was what I was making per week to go out and play with Billy Idol back in the beginning.
See?
I mean, you know, but we knew how good it was. Each one of us, I mean, Judy, Phil, you know, Steve, Billy, myself, we all knew how great this particular band was, and you know, the audience doesn't lie. I mean, they'll boo you right off the stage, but everywhere we went, people were just going nuclear, man. It was just, and we were just like, wow, this is really fun.
Yeah.
So it was a fun time.
Yeah. Matter of fact, recently for my birthday, Phil had actually sent me a DVD, which I've been looking for years, of all the TV shows that you guys did together with Billy,
uh-huh,
like
yeah.
Solid Gold, American Bandstand, and stuff. and what a blast it was to watch that.
Yeah, American. I did American Bandstand a few times, but the ones that I did with Billy were the most fun, you know. I mean, I got to tell you, that was a fun gig. But listen, playing with Steve is really fun.
Oh yeah,
Steve is so great, and I, you know, and then to go on and play with him through the, you know, during the Atomic Playboys, that was really a fun time too.
Right, which I was just going to mention, and I remember coming to see you guys play at the Cat Club in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I was right there in the front.
Mm-hmm.
It was packed. The place was packed.
Yeah.
I remember. It's like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
And it wasn't yesterday, but I'll never forget Steve. I was right in front of where Steve was, and at the time, you know, of course, he had the big black hair and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just playing his guitar solos right in front of me, and it was like, just like for you, watching all these guys like Count Basie and Buddy Rich, and it was mind blowing for me to see that.
Yeah, it was a surreal experience for me. I mean, imagine. I mean, for me personally, it was surreal because, I mean, I'd be playing and I'd feel like almost stepping out of myself and looking at it from, you know, the outside perspective. It was just pretty, you know, it's pretty surreal to you know, I mean, really surreal.
Well, actually, let's talk about the song that we're going to play because I want to get it ready to play.
Okay.
And the song, I'm just typing a thing there, and the album that you guys went on to do after the White Wedding Tour, which was Rebel Yell, which
mm-hmm.
became a multi-platinum, if I'm right, multi-platinum gold and everything, that record was just a great album with such great songs.
Oh, man, I have more records hanging on my wall just from that alone, you know?
That it definitely spawned off a lot of great singles, like Eyes Without a Face and Flesh of Fantasy. And the track Do Not Stand in the Shadows, do you, like, remember anything about that
song?
Oh,
yeah, I remember. Well, you know, we recorded all those tracks on that record, and you know, and then Tommy came in, and Tommy Price, who's also a really great drummer, man. Tommy came in a bit later, and I'll tell you the truth, I'm not really sure what was kept and what was left, because basically that particular record was recorded. We were actually, you know, Keith Forsey had the Lynn drum had just come in into the drum world and or producer's world. And for those of you in the audience who don't know what a Lynn drum is, the Lynn drum was the first basically programmable drum machine that had somewhat realistic drum sounds. And so a lot of producers went Lynn drum nuts, you know, back in, you know, in the mid-80s. And it was pretty disturbing, to tell you the truth. It sucked. But needless to say, I tracked a bunch of those tunes on Rebel Yell, so Do Not Stand in the Shadow was one of them that I did, and I remember that was I remember actually rehearsing that song even as vivid as I remember recording it. It was just a fun song to play, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely a driving, in your face kind of song. The intro that Steve does on the guitar is brilliant too. Your drumming is great, and you know, leads questions to bass playing duties on there. But, you know, all overall, with that record, it's definitely a very strong album. And
mm-hmm.
So without further ado, let's play Do Not Stand in the Shadows, the Billy Idol song off the album Rebel Yell.
Okay.
We'll be back in a few moments.
All right.
Get in love if you believe that you can succeed.
Ever thought about contacting a loved one who has crossed over? Hi, I'm Glenn Klausner. As a world-renowned psychic medium, I have been reuniting departed loved ones for those here in the physical world for the past decade, bringing evidential proof and closure that our loved ones do indeed live on in the afterlife and that the bonds of love never die. To schedule an appointment with me, you can visit my website at www.glennklausner.com. That's www.glennklausner.com or call my office today at 239-437-0007. And remember to live, love, and laugh.
Welcome back to the Glenn Klausner Hour, and thank you for joining us tonight. My good friend, Greg Gersten, who is like another brother to me, is on the show with us, and we're going to open up the phone lines if anyone wants to call in and talk to Greg and ask him a question. The phone number is toll-free, 1-877-230-3062. Once again, the phone number is 877-230-3062. And anybody wants to go to Greg's website, it's www.greg.com. Greg, with two G's at the end, G-R-E-G-G, Gersten, G-E-R-S-O-N.com. And Greg's got so many wonderful things in his website. And if you go into the photo gallery, he's got tons of photos with everybody he's played with. And if you go into a page that says Adam Baum Photos, you'll actually see a photo of Greg and me from the early 90s.
Oh, my God.
A blast from the past.
I feel like a fossil. I feel like a fossil. No, man, life is good, you know?
Hey, I'm 21 now and you're 30.
Hey, let me tell you something. I've never felt better. I mean, people call me to work. I show up on time, work well with others, you know? I mean, it's all good.
Well, that's the thing, you know, it's like an interesting angle that you just brought up because, you know, Greg, you being a professional musician, and this has been your gig for like 30 years now.
Oh, yeah.
And you are a pro.
Don't tell anyone.
Oh, 10 years.
Yeah, that's it. That's the ticket.
But, I mean, a lot of musicians nowadays really, you know, like these things like, I don't want to talk about some of these TV shows that try to get these pop idols and stuff. But,
you know, it's funny, I got to tell you, I'm going to interrupt you a second. You know, Gilby Clark and I go, I've known Gilby since when I first started out playing with Billy back in 1982. And Gilby was playing with a band, in fact, the last time I saw Gilby was about a month ago. I was up in L.A. recording, doing a record, and I had called him like a week before. Anyway, he had called me and said, hey, Greg, you know, anyway, he and I were wrenching. He's got a 1969 El Camino, and we were wrenching. We were basically reinstalling a steering system into the car. And Gilby's a great guy. There's a guy who's been around forever. You know, and to see him on Supernova Rockstar, I mean, it's just a good thing, man, because he is such a good guy. You know, nothing to do with him personally. The show itself and the whole idea of these shows, like Idol, what's it?
American Idol.
American Idol, and you know these shows have they're like homogenized musicians and stars. It's like, oh, let's create. You know, now I can't tell you how many great singers I have had the privilege of playing with. That will never ever get that kind of you know, I guess, you know, exposure. And I'm not taking anything away from anybody. I just have a difficult time with the whole idea of that kind of a show. You know, that to me is not, I don't know. I mean, you know, do you think that the Beatles, I mean, really, think about this, man. If the Beatles were to kind of come onto the scene right now, do you think that anybody would even notice?
No, definitely not.
Is that not a crime?
No, definitely not. No.
Is that not a crime? I mean, some of the greatest songs ever written in the 20th century were written by Paul McCartney and John Lennon, man, and
my two fathers,
dude. I'm telling you, it's just wrong.
No, it is. I mean, this is when Phil, you know, was on my show a few weeks ago, and we were talking about the current state of the music business and where it's at, and you know, he had a good real view on that. But like, you know, with the show with Supernova, it's funny because there was a guy that was on there. I don't know if he's still on the show because I haven't had a chance to watch it lately.
Mm-hmm.
But he did a version of Rebel Yell, and it was...
I saw that.
I was like, oh, God.
Actually, I was in the other room, and Angela was screaming out, Greg, you got to see that. I came out, and I'm watching this guy, you know, and we kind of got a chuckle. I'll tell you, you want to know what I think? You want to hear something? The house band?
Yeah.
The house band on Supernova?
Right.
They're great. Lamb.
Yeah, the bass player in that actually tells Steve this. The bass player,
Sasha.
Right, he played with Steve and Billy a couple years ago on tour.
That guy is a monster.
Yeah.
That guy is just killing it. They're, ladies and gentlemen, definitely the next time you turn on the Supernova,
pay attention to the house band. They're slamming.
Listen to that house band, because I'm going to tell you what, those guys are slamming it. Okay. All right. I mean, I'm sure that Gilby and the guys are going to be, you know, Tommy and. And you know, I think they're gonna do a really great band, and I hope that they find the right singer. But that house band is, I tell you what, those guys are just killing it. You know, they make anybody sound good. Okay,
that's very very true, very true.
You know, but the whole idea of these shows are for me are very very disheartening, man. Because you know, I mean. The whole idea of being an artist is to create something and then work it and just work it and work it. And here you've got instant stardom, you know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you have to sort of build a foundation of every house that you build, man. You've got to put the concrete down, the pilings and the concrete. And listen, I don't want anyone here tonight to think that I'm a disgruntled musician. No, I don't want to come off like I'm jealous or
anything. No.
It has nothing to do with it. I mean, I have the greatest job in the world. People pay me to do what I love to do. This is not about me personally. This is just about my personal feelings regarding the status of, I mean, you know, just kind of what's going on now and you know, this whole idea. And look, you know, I mean, if Gilby called me tomorrow and said, hey, man, how you doing? I would never slag the show or anything like that, because I don't think that's proper. It's not nice, you know what I mean?
No, and that's not you. I mean, and I'm not saying this because I know you. You're totally a different person. A lot of people think, Greg, that, you know, musicians that are of your caliber are like not the nicest people in the world sometimes, you know?
Oh.
And you know this from knowing people in the music industry. But I mean, I can say this on your behalf, and guys like you, I mean, one of the most down-to-earth people I've ever met. You're very spiritual, you know, very full of love. I mean, you've got a great heart, and you know...
Thanks, Glenn.
Oh, yeah, you know, and I say this not because, again, you know, you've always been like a brother to me, and we've just known each other, of course, through Phil, and, you know...
Yeah, but you and I have our own friendship. I mean,
exactly.
Really, you and I are friends, and we've been able to meet... We've stayed friends, because I was just telling my friend John and his son Forrest, I was just telling them today, I says, you know... Having a friend is one thing, but keeping your friends is another. You don't have friends unless you are a friend. You know, I show up for my friends, they show up for me. And, you know, the only time I'm a star is when I'm on the stage. And as soon as I'm done off that stage, I leave it there, man. You want to be a star on the stage. That's
sure.
Everybody that's a professional performer must be a star on the stage. But then leave it there when you step off.
You know what, Greg? It's the same thing, not to take to put the equation there, but it's the same thing as my work as a medium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm on, and I'm like the Superman guy, you know, doing the readings, but when I'm not working, it's like I'm off stage, so to speak. You know, it's that kind of, that the same sort of thing, in a different way, though.
I mean, I'm going to tell you something. All my friends, like one of my best friends is a professional painter. You know, he paints houses. Another friend of mine is a mechanic. I mean, a lot of my friends I don't have a whole lot of friends, but the friends that I do have are just regular folk like you and I, you know?
Right.
And for me, a great day is to get on my motorcycle and just go down the road, man, you know? Just, I love my Harley.
You've got, two or three of them, right?
No, I have one.
Just one now?
That is just a super... And ladies and gentlemen, go to my website. It's right on the site there. I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of this bike. I have a really nice motorcycle. I'll just leave it at that. I'm not going to get... if your curiosity starts to get out of control, go to my website at www.greggerson.com. That's Greg Gerson with three G's in the middle. And go to the photo gallery and look at, 2006, the motorcycle, and you'll see what I got.
And that motorbike is called the Gersonic Flow.
You know, it's funny, you know, Billy... last time I saw Billy Idol, the first thing he said to me, he said, so what are you riding? That's the first thing he said, so what do you got? That was the first thing he said to me. He goes, so what do you got? You know, I said, you know, and we started talking bikes, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. Well, yeah, he's big into that. So.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's cool and that you're doing that, too, and you love it. And, of course, I mean, it's great. I think one of my favorite experiences, and I've... You know, of course, met up with you so many times in New York for coffee and for lunch, and I think one of my most memorable experiences of hanging out with you was the funniest time, talking about Will Lee earlier. We were sitting at the cafe down there in the village, and he came up to you with his girlfriend, and it was you and I just sitting there for coffee and lunch.
Wait a minute, step back, this is, Angela just walked in. This was, you and I were sitting for coffee?
Yeah, at this cafe down in Greenwich Village.
Probably the Cafe Reggio on McDougal Street.
Yes, yes. And we were sitting there, and Will Lee walked up with his girlfriend, and it was a beautiful summer day, and I was very busy checking out all the young ladies walking by.
Oh, yes.
And while you were engaged in a conversation with Will, and I had stupidly didn't realize it was Will Lee, and he turns the corner, and I said, who is that, Will Lee? It was just the funniest thing, you know, because I wasn't like...
There's another wonderful, wonderful guy. He's probably one of the sweetest guys you'll ever get to know. Besides being one of the greatest bass players, and you know something, he's an amazingly good singer. And
yeah.
For most people, don't realize how good Will can sing, but he is just a great singer. And he's one of the. I mean, you know, you know, for all of you that are tuning in, when you watch Dave Letterman, if you ever get a chance, and they show the band, and you see the bass player with the tall fellow with the blonde hair playing bass, that's Will Lee. One of the greats, and God, we've been friends since a long time, man.
Long time.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, let's talk about while we still have some time left tonight.
Sure.
Let's talk about the gig that you're currently doing with Alexander Markoff. And I'm going to give out that website. It's www.alexander, just like it sounds, and the last name is Markoff, MARKOV. com. And this guy, this musician who I've not met that Greg has worked with, is friggin' brilliant, and I can say that on my show.
Even Steve Stevens will tell you. I mean, anybody who's ever seen him play, I mean, Yitzhak Perlman is one of the greatest violinists, has said that Alexander is the best, and he is. And Will Lee told me, he said, Greg, this guy is the best musician I have ever worked with. And he wasn't wrong.
People got to check him out.
And the thing that's really neat about him, Glenn, is that he features both Ivan and I. And he really wants he's so secure in who he is as a person and as a musician, he would never try to hold any of the musicians that he works with back. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. He only wants players that are, keep grabbing for the ring, you know what I'm saying? He's absolutely beyond brilliant. Of all the musicians I have ever worked with, Alexander Markoff is the best. I mean, he's just on another level.
Yeah, it is another level, and it's definitely hard to explain, you know? I mean, in my way, trying to put that together, I mean, it is just brilliant. I could just say it's a very, very brilliant thing, and people should check it out. I mean, you guys played a show here in the United States up in Bridgeport, Connecticut, back about 2 months ago.
Yes.
Right? And so now you're about to go, you were in Turkey and you were in Israel with this guy, and now you're about to go off to Cyprus.
Yeah, we played Turkey quite a few times, in fact. And we played in, we were in Bat Yam, Israel, which is right near Tel Aviv. We were actually playing with the Tel Aviv Symphony. And they were brilliant. But I have to tell you, man, the gig here in the United States in Bridgeport was just really, really, really fun. And, yeah, I'm having a great time doing this, man. It's really challenging because Alexander writes this music that, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, you better be able to read to play with this guy, yeah, you know.
Yeah, it's not so much the kind of music that you could play by ear.
You've
got to definitely be a sight reader in music, and a lot of people don't know.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, you got to be able to read to play with. I mean, but at the same time, you know, the music is just, you can listen to it and really enjoy it. It's not, I mean, it's rock. It's rocking hard, man. The only thing is, we have a full symphony orchestra behind us, you know.
Got to be, it has to be such a wonderful spiritual high, because from the drum solo that I've seen, the video clip, which is, Greg also has a profile on MySpace.com, which is MySpace.com/Greg, with the two G's at the end, of course, Gerson, G-E-R-S-O-N, and you can see the clip on there, and it's just phenomenal. I mean, the drum solo is like...
Yeah, it's fun.
It leaves you into another dimension.
Yeah, it's really fun. I mean, you know, the solo part of it is where I get to express my own personal... music.
Greg, I do have a comment for you coming in from the chat room, though.
Sure.
On my friend who's online, she goes by the name One Shot Cowgirl.
Okay.
And, she went to go take a look at your website, and she wrote, Greg, great WTC pictures, which for those people who don't know what the WTC means, is the World Trade Center.
Oh, yeah.
And that actually, Greg, you know, not to change the subject really quick, so it's because, God, time goes so fast. I could do like a 4-hour interview with you.
Sure.
This is one thing. You know, when 9/11 had happened, which I tell you, Greg, as a friend, I am so proud of you that you risked your own life, your hands and your feet, that
yeah,
you
it was,
used for...
it was pretty gnarly, man.
You went down there to help out.
Well, I was down there for quite a while, man, burning steel. I mean, I know how to weld, and needless to say, the night after the attack, I was down there from the 12th of September, 2001 on... for quite a while as an iron worker down there, and we were front lines. The iron, I mean, I stopped playing music. In fact, it was funny because I remember Will Lee was doing a benefit concert with Paul McCartney, and Will had tried to get in touch with me, and then he found out that I was down on the pile actually burning, and he was like, whoa. But I was down there for a long time. I'm going to tell you that changes one's life, puts one's life in perspective when you're smelling and touching and seeing death the way I did. So I mean, now I take nothing for granted, nor person, place, or thing, man. You know, life is sacred, and so you know what we do and the gifts that we get as musicians or artists. That's all. They're all gifts, man. But the real gift is the gift of life, man. And you know, I was, you know, I have on my website, folks, if you go to my website, you'll see I took a series of photos, and I think picture will tell 1,000 words, and I was there for quite a while, and it changed my life. In fact, I still have nightmares.
I'm sure, you know, because...
Yeah, I do. I mean, I you know.
I mean, you actually woke up that morning to the sound of what was going on down
there. The first jet literally flew over my apartment building on McDougal Street. It flew over like 500 feet above my... I mean, the turbines are extremely loud on a jet, man. 500 feet above you, full speed ahead, man. It woke me out of my, you know, out of my bed, almost flew out of my bed. And then I was on the roof of my building and watched the second plane hit. And everything went out, and so I went over to the Union Hall where this particular union that I actually signed into the day of the attack, the fellow was there, and I actually joined the union just so I could work down there. You know, I mean, I'm not a career iron worker, but I'm going to tell you what. You always hear about fire and police, and God bless them, man. But the iron guys that were down there were the frontline guys, because fire and police, God bless, like I said, man, the most courageous people ever meet. A fireman that walks into a fire when people are running out of a fire. Anytime you see a fireman walk up and shake their hand, same with a police officer. These folks are These folks risk their lives every day, man. But let me tell you something. You don't hear about the iron workers. We were front line. A lot of times they couldn't get into certain places to get into, you know, they couldn't get into certain places, and they needed iron guys to come in and cut and burn. And that's where we would come in, and just the engineers would say, okay, burn here, don't burn there, you know. And I saw a lot of nasty stuff, man, on the front lines like that.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, one shot cowgirl is saying, you know, that God bless you and that you rock, and she loves the photos and you're truly amazing.
You tell her, well, one shot cowgirl, thank you. Thank you so much.
And that, you know, and then that whole thing was just, I can't believe it's like going on 5 years already.
Yeah.
Since that happened. It's just
surreal.
Like,
I'm having mixed feelings regarding this movie that's coming out called World Trade Center with Nicolas Cage. I'm not so sure. I don't know how I feel about that, you know. I mean, the movie's basically about two police officers that were trapped and then a series of other folks that came to rescue them the day of the attack. They were trapped. They went in, and the building, I think number two, fell on them. And I was working number two. I was working 2 and 7.
It's weird because, you know, me growing up in Brooklyn and always, of course, you know, from where I lived, I can see the World Trade Center. And I remember when I had come in, you actually came to the seminar that I had done in Midtown.
Yeah.
Like roughly 3 years ago, and that had been my first time back in New York in a number of years. And I remember coming down to meet you, and I was riding in a cab down Fifth Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, you know how as you get towards the Village, you can see the World Trade Center. And I remember looking up, and the cab driver must have known what I was looking for. And he was like, isn't it weird that it's not there? And I'm like, very weird.
It's gone. Yeah, it's gone.
You know, and so... But, you know, Greg, again, you know, I say it to you because I don't think I've ever talked to you about this, that I have so much admiration that you went down there to be part of a New Yorker and an American to help out. And here you risked your own life and as well as your hands and feet, which are very necessary in the world of drumming.
I'm going to tell you something, man. I love America. I love this country more than I'll tell you something. We are, I mean, there's certain things about, you know, the way things happen. I mean, you know, politically, certain things happen I'm not that thrilled with, and certain people that are sort of running the show that I'm not that happy with. But you know what? We live in the greatest country in the world.
Sure.
I love America, and I would do anything I could to protect, you know, what we have here. And that was an opportunity for me. In fact, I tried to enlist, and they said I was... Oh, I hate this. God, I can't believe it. I tried to enlist, and they said, you're too old. And I told the fella in the enlistment office, I'll kick your butt from here to the other side of the room, man. I'll say how old I am. And he laughed, and he said, no, man, I'd love to, you know, we'd love to take you in, but you're, you know, anyway. So.
Absolutely, and I just want to bring these comments out because they're, you know, because we're talking about this subject that I'm getting, like, bombarded with all these things in the chat room, and actually...
You know what, Glenn, I think that, you know, the music thing and the rock and roll thing and the jazz thing, that's all cool, but I think what we're talking about right now regarding the World Trade Center in America... And our freedom, I think that's the stuff that's really going to resonate with people.
Well, here's the thing, you know, and I agree with you, because, you know, I've had a few of the music shows, and I agree, everybody's always going, you know, why are you going to be talking about the whole spiritual thing? And I do in a lot of shows, but this
yeah.
one, you know, Cameron, who runs Contact Talk Radio that we're on, he says that everyone's always talking about the victims of the World Trade Center, but what about the people in the airplanes and at the Pentagon? And I agree with him, you know, it's very true that we must not forget what took place at the Pentagon and on the four airplanes that were, you know, sadly hijacked and used as weapons of mass destruction as missiles.
The whole thing was just absolutely, absolutely unbelievable that it could happen. I don't know what to say except that all I know is I had an opportunity to make a difference and I took it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean,
and to me, that's really what that. I think that's. What makes life really worth living, man, is to actually, you know, instead of talking about it, do it, you know? Instead of sitting there, just make it. If you want to make a difference, you got to make a difference, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it was an opportunity for me, and I, you know, I was on the pot. Believe me, it was one of the most dangerous. You have no idea. I mean, I had to change my shoes like three times a night. I mean, I'd work at, my tour started at 7 and ended at 7 a.m., and I would have to change my boots like three times a night because I was burning steel on top of a fire, man. The pile was, there was fire underneath the pile, man. The soles of my shoes would burn off. And every hour I'd have to step and go to triage and get my eyes cleared out because there was so much dust and debris, you know?
It's just horrible. But, you know, you, Greg, made a difference, which a lot of people there is heroes in the world, and people.
There's a lot of people who made differences. Not, you know, I'm just one of many.
Yeah, you're just one of many. But you know what? The fact that you did is something that I can't. You're the only person I know that did something like that.
Well, you know,
meaning in that kind of situation, yeah. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, I love this country. You know, I mean, I do what I love to do. You know, being a professional musician is just a gift. But what's really the true gift is life itself, man, you know. And I don't take, like I said, man, I take life one day at a time, and I don't take anything for granted, neither person, place, or thing, man. Everything is sacred, you know, everyone, you know. And I don't want to sound like a saint here. I'm just telling you that this is just how I live, you know.
No, I know. And, you know, you have one of your sayings.
God steers and I row?
Yes. God, you must be psychic, because yeah, I was just going to say that.
Buddy. But it's true. God steers, I row.
Yeah, and I remember one time you sent me an email and saying that, and I go, man, I love that quote.
I have another one. Expectations are resentments waiting to happen.
Hey, I like that.
Make no expectations on anyone or thing, man, and you won't have any resentments. You hear that, folks?
You hear that first here tonight, live from Greg Gerson.
Expectations are resentments waiting to happen. Can you dig it?
I dig it. You know, it really makes you ponder the thought. It really does. I mean,
no expectations, man. Just, you know, it's all good.
It's definitely an all good thing. And this gig that you've got coming up in Cyprus, which will be in September.
Yeah, Cyprus. In fact, Alexander called me this morning confirming that it's like a 90% sure that we're going to do this concert. I remember telling my better half, Angela, that I don't think it's going to happen. And then I got a call this morning from Alexander saying, Greg, we just got word that it looks like it's going to happen. So, you know, we're going to fly to Cyprus in the Mediterranean, which is an unbelievable place, man. I mean, folks, if you've ever been to, like, I've been to Turkey a number of times now. That region is just it's unbelievable. And the Turks, I love Turkey, and I love the people. If you ever get a chance to go, Istanbul, unbelievable place. It's an unbelievable place, and the people are just wonderful. And I'll tell you something, their symphony, boy, can those people can play. Oh, man.
So what's going to happen now? I have to come to the Mediterranean to see you play?
No. Alex is right now working on a series of shows in the United States, so...
All right, then I'll come to that, because I'm not flying to, like, Israel to see you play. You know, I love you. I'll come see you play, but I'm not flying there.
And my cat and dog are going ballistic right now. That's so funny. Right? My cat. I haven't posted any updated information about what I'm doing right now because I just haven't, you know. But there's stuff going on. I just have to spend some time and just actually update the site with all the cool stuff that's going on as far as what I'm doing musically. And you can go to my site at... GregGerson.com, GregGerson.com, and you'll just go to current news, and I don't know how current my news is right now. I'm embarrassed to say, but...
No. You know, listen, you're a busy...
I got a lot of great pictures there, Glenn.
A lot of great pictures, and it's and actually, you know, they go even into the Billy Idol photos. They'll see all these photos of you and my brother with Billy, which is kind of a real blast in the past, too. And then actually, just to let you know, in closing tonight, because we're just about out of time,
mm-hmm.
I actually did try to get Phil and, of course, your buddy Steve Stevens to call in. So if Steve's listening, hello, Steve, and welcome back from Europe. And we love you.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I love him.
And we love Phil, too. And
we love Phil.
You know, Steve's it's
and
great.
We love you, Glenn.
Well,
ladies and gentlemen, Glenn Klasner. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant man.
Well, thank you. You know, Greg, I mean, it's such a great thing, you know, for me to have friends like you, which you were saying earlier, you know, you can have friends, but it's about keeping them. And one of the things, you know, I just quickly to say, like, this thing, you know, I know you and I kind of have our feelings about this with MySpace, whereas, like, you know, I've noticed all these people go ahead and they request to be your friend, and they never really care to get to know you. It's like a freaking popularity contest.
I don't personally get that at all.
No.
I don't really get that. That's why I don't really respond to a whole lot of those kind of requests, because my friends are my friends. They're the people that I know. You know, I mean, anybody you see up on my particular profile are people that I actually know and have a relationship with, you know.
Right, and that's the important thing. And
that to me is the real deal, man. I mean, you know, There's people out there that have 50 billion friends. Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a popularity contest.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say this live on the air in case people are hearing this, that anybody who wants to request to be my friend on MySpace, if you're really my friend, I will add you. But if you're not and I don't know you, I'm not going to add you. Done. You want to be my friend?
Oh, darn it.
You know, I have to have that little bit of that, the shrewd New Yorker in me.
Yeah.
And all that. And, Greg, you know, I just want to say thank you so much for taking time tonight from your busy schedule to be a guest on my show and to get to spend time with my audience, too.
Glenn, I really appreciate you asking me to do it because you and I are friends, and I don't mind, and I'll tell you something else. For all of you out there, if you email me, I will email you back. I really will do that, okay? You are my friend, Glenn, and I this was fun, you know, to talk about, you know, stuff.
Absolutely. It's great. You know, because when we talk, we're talking on a friend thing, and I very rarely even talk to you. I was telling this to Phil. I very rarely talk about music stuff, unless, you know, he brings up to me or I ask him something, but it's real kind of rare because I like to keep that level, you know.
Well,
what I mean?
Like I was saying before, Glenn, a lot of my friends aren't in music. I mean, I don't really talk about music. I just do it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't talk about it. And when I'm with Steve, we don't talk about, honey, do we talk about music? Never. No, we don't talk about music.
No.
Like Steve and I, like Steve and his better half, me and my better half, the four of us went up, we all met up in L.A. Right before this tour here that he's out on. And we sat down and talked about stuff, you know, that's going on in our lives, man. We never talked about it. The only thing that was mentioned regarding music was right before I left, we hugged each other, and he looked at me and says, "Will you play on my new record?" That's what Steve said. And that was the only thing that was talked about musically. I mean,
right, and that's it.
And I just looked up at him and I said, "Yeah, of course. You know that. Come on."
Sure, it's a different thing. It's a totally different thing. But I'm just going to say this, and stick with me on the phone because I'm going to close out the show.
Okay.
That for all of you curious minds that have always wanted to know what is it truly like of me being a psychic medium, well, tune in next week because I will be doing that show by myself, telling you about the wonderful world that I live in and inhabit as a guy talking to dead people. So you definitely don't want to miss that show. And I'm going to do a couple other shows that kind of revolve around that, about the process of mediumship and, you know, the expectations that people have and the whole kind of thing with that. So I want to thank each and every one of you for being here tonight. Let love keep on loving you, and I hope you find your Satori. And until next week, I wish you much love, peace, and happiness.
Amen,
and thank you, Greg.
To
you
schedule
got it,
an appointment with me, you can visit my website at www.glennklausner.com. That's www.glennklausner.com.